Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 306, my chat with actor, director, and improviser, Emma Bird. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. I'd like to have a little shout out to all the people that are listening to Yes But Why on Audible. I noticed that quite a few listens were coming in through the app, so good on you guys for using the app and, you know, checking out all the amazing books and podcasts that are available on Audible. There's just so much going on right now in my life at South by Southwest, so I haven't looked at Audible in a while, but as soon as I have 2 seconds, I will definitely be back on the Audible app reading all the books that I want to consume and use to, you know, fill up my own creative cup, you know? Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You sign up and get your account today. It's totally worth it. You're going to love it. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by podcastcadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company of my husband, Chris, and I, and we created it just to provide resources for podcasters. So go to PodcastCadet.com and see if there is anything on the website that maybe could help you. And if you need, just send us a message and we will get in contact with you about how we can help you with your podcast. Most of the stuff that we've already put up on there is free, but in the case that you end up buying something from us, you can use the code YBY20 and get 20% off. All we want to do is help other podcasters like ourselves, so check out podcastcadet.com. This week on Yes But Why, I talked to founder of Liverpool Comedy Improv, Emma Bird. This was a great conversation about creativity. Listen in as we gab about how much we love helping adults embrace their playful side. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 306, Emma Bird and the importance of saying yes. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
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 This is the Yes But Why podcast.
I think I just made stuff up. So I wasn't so much into dolls and, you know, figures that you'd play with. It was more imaginative play, I suppose. And and quite a lot of board games and card games as well. So me and my sister were kind of, we would, I think at one point we counted up, we knew at least 20 different card games.
Wow.
I wouldn't know them now, but yeah, so we did a lot of, yeah, if I was out and about, like in the garden, in the outdoors, it was always imaginative play. And if it was indoors, it was, yeah, board games and card games. Yeah.
Were you and your sister always playing together?
Yeah. I mean, we get on really well and we're quite close in age. So she was like my best pal basically when we were growing up. And, I've got, everything to thank her for being my big sister.
Well, it's nice. I get a lot of stories about, siblings that did not get along. So it's nice to hear about ones that did. Like, oh, that exists. Oh, wow. Okay, great. I'm so glad.
Yeah. Because she's a lot more sensible or serious than I. Like, I was always quite silly. I guess that's another thing that feeds into adult styles of play. I was always a bit cheeky, emotional, naughty, funny, and silly, and quite physical. And so I think that now I'm thinking about it, all of those ways of being, I think, lend itself to improv massively, obviously. And that I think that is still the way that I perform. That's the way I play when I perform, is kind of fast, silly, a bit bonkers and yeah, quite physical. So yeah, a bit sort of anarchic. Yeah.
I like that you said naughty. Now, do you think that, did you get in a lot of trouble or were you just like playing pranks on people?
Didn't really get into trouble, actually. I was in school, I was quite a good girl. And, you know, so I was a rule follower, you know, in that respect. But when I was with my mates and we were out and about playing, we'd do the classic childhood dares of like, I dare you to knock on that door and run away and things like that. And we used to like, in the summertime, we'd fill up washing up liquid bottles with water and squirt cars as they drove by and stuff like that. So that's kind of a bit naughty, in a kind of cheeky way.
Yeah. You know?
But no, I didn't really get into trouble. I was always been a bit of a rule follower.
Oh, good. Interesting. When you said naughty, I was immediately like, yeah, I mean, I did a lot of things I wasn't supposed to, but nobody ever knew about it. Like, I'm very good at being like, what? That wasn't me? I am a perfect child. Are you... Yeah, I had my parents convinced for years that I was absolutely perfect, and my sister was the troublemaker. And she'd be like, how is it that you are not getting in trouble? And I was like, hey, man, I just don't get caught. Don't get caught. Yeah. You don't get in trouble. when you said naughty, it immediately made me think, like, you know, going into theater as a career, long term is not always what people are like, hey, you know what's the you should do with your life? So the idea of having this vibe of doing something that you shouldn't do, I feel like is a sort of a open door, sort of the gateway to making a choice for yourself. Like, yeah, I'm going to have a career that's unorthodox that people would be like, yeah, I don't think that's the right move. And you're like, really? Well, I'm going to do it then. Like,
yeah, I totally get that. That makes sense. For me, because like I started doing drama when I was a kid. I went to my local area, had a youth theatre.
Awesome.
So, I was a youth theatre kid, and that was the first time that I did improv without me knowing that that's what I was doing. But yeah, I joined the youth theatre at, I think I was about 7 years old, actually.
Perfect.
And that was like the first time that I found my tribe, really, and found like that I could express myself, I could be silly and I am playful and collaborative, you know, make stuff up with people. Was great. And then of course we also did some plays as kids and stuff like that and performed them. So I just felt like at that point between the ages of like 7 and 13, you know, youth theatre was like, that's what I did. And it was definitely my tribe. And so I think yes, it's unorthodox to become an actor. But given that was my main influence growing up, that was my tribe. It kind of, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. And by the time I was 16, I, you know, dramatically declared that to my parents that that's what I was going to do. And they were really supportive. And, you know, I didn't really have a clue how to go about it. I just knew that acting and performing was where I felt at home. And it was the only place that I felt like I could express myself. And that's probably still true to this day, that it is theatre in particular is the place where I feel at home. And that's where I can express
my creativity
and my inner self or selves. Yeah.
Totally. No, I am in complete agreement. I make sure that all of my circles have creativity in them, or else I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about. What? Like, yeah. I just can't connect.
I think that I'm the same. And I think that, I mean, I've had episodes, you know, phases and stages in my life where creativity was not a huge part of my life. So I was in my 30s and 40s, I was a teacher in secondary school.
Oh.
And so that's like state school. And it was so all-consuming and stressful that my own inner innate creativity was kind of put on the back burner. And so I did feel at that point, I think I lasted for about 6 years full-time teaching in school. And then after 6 years, I was like, I'm just dying. You know, I don't have the energy or space mentally or physically or emotionally to be creative, to express myself, to perform, to create projects, to make theater. I didn't have any capacity to do that. So I left teaching and went back into kind of freelance life of being, a much more creative person. So I have tried the conventional and it didn't work for me.
It's good that you tried, though. It's important, I think, sometimes to try, especially when a lot of times, you know, I feel like I'm going to say society with air quotes here, but like when society says, oh, that, you know, you need to have a real job or whatever, you're like, all right, I'll try. Let's see how that goes. And then it's like, yeah, I don't know that really worked out. Right. And here's the thing. There are some jobs you can get and then it doesn't take that much bandwidth. And then you can go ahead and do like improv classes in the evening and stuff. And I get that. And A+ to that. Like if you can have a job where you're like not mentally exhausted and then also you have the evenings to like do other things. Great. Absolutely. Do whatever you want. Write that novel.
Yeah.
Get in that improv class. Whatever it is, as long as you have that mind space. But yeah, teaching, like it is an all-encompassing, like full emotional roller coaster, no matter what you're teaching. So the idea that you're in school all day, yeah, I can't imagine. You're like, I'm going to go to sleep now. They're like, it's 3 p.m. You're like, yes, that's correct. Like, it's yeah. Just so, there's so many people, there's so much put upon. I mean, my mother was a teacher, so like my whole life is like, hey, I get it. Like, teachers, they get the brunt of it. Every bit of it. And nobody cares about them, like at all. Like they're doing the hardest, most important work of anyone. I mean, I guess other than doctors, you guys are doing great. But like teachers had to teach you how to be a doctor. So I'm just saying they're better because they have to create everything, right? And yet we like, you know, they're like scum on the bottom of our shoes somehow. I'm like, what? Why are they not the like making CEO money and like every day we have like a teacher parade where we just go like, oh my God, they're amazing. You're great. Like throw them candy. Like,
yeah,
you know, they do everything for us.
Yeah, they do. And it's something that I really love. I mean, the main thing that I do now is teach, but I teach adults and I teach improvisation. So they're the sort of, that's the criteria that I feel really happy with, and that I've created this sort of small business that feeds improv and feeds teaching, because both of those things I love. And I teaching hasn't left me. It's just that I left institutional teaching.
Yeah.
But teaching as a calling or a profession or a love or a passion hasn't left me.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I get tired now, it's just it doesn't take me long to reboot and then and continue, because I absolutely love teaching. So and improv, so it's a win-win.
Absolutely. When you can find the topic that you can teach and the environment, because you also mentioned the idea of getting back into the freelance lifestyle. I really think that, you know, you're built for one or the other. You're like, you're built for institutional work. You do 9 to 5 or you have, you know, a regular sort of schedule, or you're like job to job. And that's the only way that you can like do it.
Yeah. I definitely think there's pros and cons to both. I mean, having experienced both, I gained a lot from having the security when I was a teacher. You know, having a salary is, it gives you so much security. but you know, the cost for me in terms of my creativity was a lot. So that's why I just flipped back into being a freelance. I mean, before I was a teacher, I was an actor, so I was used to the freelance life. And then teaching gave me security, and I liked the security, but I hated what it cost me.
Yeah.
So then jumping back into freelance, I have to take the pros and cons with it, because I know that I pretty much know that I couldn't really do anything else. I can't do the 9-to-5. I can't do the conventional or the institutional way of living and earning. I just have to have that sense of freedom. And creative space in my own brain.
Yeah. Everybody has to find their own way, the way that works best for them, right? Mm-hmm. I definitely talk to people where they're like, oh yeah, I'm an engineer all day, and then I go to my improv classes at night. And I'm like, good for you, man. If that's mm-hmm. something that you can do and that works for you, great. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Do it up. And, you know, one of the girls that is in my writing group is like a scientist during the day. And it was all like, scientist during the day, novelist at night. Look at you. Like, but hey, it's whatever works for you. And you have to find your own little corner of the world. I'm glad that you found a thing that works for you.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of came out, Liverpool Comedy Improv, my improv school, just came out of necessity. Because I moved city and moved back to the town that I was born in, which is Liverpool. And, I knew what I didn't want. I didn't want to be in debt. I didn't want to, work for the man, as I call it.
Right. Me too.
and so it's like, well, what can I do? And the only thing that I know how to do is to teach and to improvise and perform. But performing per se doesn't necessarily give you money. You don't necessarily earn a stack load. But teaching and improv, I just married them, you know, put them together and set up Liverpool Comedy Improv as a sole trader, small business, 7 years ago, something like that. This is my 7th year, I think. So, yeah, it was born out of necessity, but like they say, what do they say? Invention is the something of necessity. I don't know, something about necessity and invention. Right. Necessity is the mother of all invention. That's it.
There you
necessity.
Go. That's totally. That's exactly right. Absolutely. Yeah. I was like, wait, it's about how if you need something, you make it. Okay, yeah, right.
Yeah. And another little phrase that I love is build it and they will come, which is a similar kind of thing. It's like if you build something, make something happen, then people will come. That, you know, that's born out for me anyway. If I want to make theatre, I make it and people come. If I want to, you know, teach improv, I make it happen and people come. So it's like, I do believe that, you know, build it and they will come.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a tough one, because in the world of like marketing and there being so much out there these days, especially now that we have access to literally the whole world with this little device. Thanks, makers of Zoom. But like, you know, it with this ability, it seems like a lot of people are trying with marketing first, content second. And it's like, no, you have to create something that you love, because your love is what draws them in. Lots of things are funny. Lots of things are good. There's, I don't know if you know, lots of famous people do improv too. They tend to flock to those. It's like with the podcast, people are like, what do you think about when famous people are doing podcasts? Are they taking listeners from you? And I was like, yeah, but they're famous people. Like that's their thing. They built their whole career on that. It's cool. I don't begrudge them that. Like, why not? Also, if it's like, if you're listening to them and me, good for both of us.
Yeah.
Like, please get more perspectives on creative minds. Like, you need to understand where we're at right now. You know, people don't think about the other options that they have in the world. And to be honest, you know, right now, I would say my audience is a niche audience of people who are already probably convinced. Whereas when a famous person talks about how maybe it would be an interesting idea to do improv, you know, some people might listen that wouldn't wouldn't know. So I'll take it. Please. Mm. Famous people, keep talking about improv. I'll take it. Like, you know, I'm never going to be like, you know, every single time I'm listening to Dax Shepard talk about the Groundlings, I was like, heck yeah, get more people involved in making comedy and like doing this kind of stuff and get them excited about it. Then they're just cool people I get to talk to in the world, right? About how they decided to. Like, well, I heard it on a podcast. Really? You know, great. Why not? Whatever it takes to inspire people to be creative, to find the way that they can do it. And also to connect with what you said about how, like, for you, having that job was not allowing your creative spirit to flourish. So you moved so that you could have that. Because you honored that in yourself is so smart. It's so like good for you. Like meaning like it's so great that you took care of yourself in that way. So many of us don't. And so I hope that people hearing that you made that choice for yourself can empower them to do it for themselves.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people wait for permission off someone or something to do stuff, or there's gatekeepers, or you know, that kind of thing. And I kind of just think, actually, if you want to, you know, if you sing and you want to sing publicly, create a choir, you know, create a community choir. Like if you perform, or if you make art and you want people to see your art, make it and then stick it in the local cafe on the wall. You know, it's like I just think artists, it's hard for artists to make a living, and we all know that, and there are compromises and sacrifices that we all have to make to feed our creativity and make a living out of it. But if you're sitting there waiting for somebody else to give you permission to do it, then it ain't gonna happen. You know, it's like the 0.1% of actors who call themselves actors are working as actors. You know, it's only like the tiniest slither of people who actually get paid work. But that shouldn't prevent you from doing your own thing anyway. And I think a lot of the things that is I think local for me anyway, staying and being grounded and anchored and rooted into the local geographical area that I am works, you know. So yeah, go local and do it yourself.
Yeah. And I would say that is like, it's almost like you had to go have the teaching job to realize that you needed to come back and be freelance. Part of me feels like for this situation where we have globalization of artists now, we can all talk to each other, we can all do this stuff, still brings it back to being like, I'm glad I got to talk to everybody and we got to pass notes and be like, oh, is that how you're doing it? Oh, that's an interesting new exercise. I'm into it. But still bringing it back to your local scene, still being focused on the people that are around you. Because, I mean, if you think about everything that happened, yeah, I'm online talking to people from all over the world, but my pod is still people that live nearby. I'm still focused on, like, I was telling somebody the other day, I've never been so friendly with my neighbors in the, you know, 8 years that we lived here. And now I like talk to them, like really talk to them, you know, not just like, hey, or hey, I have your mail. Now it's like, let's have deep discussions. Like we stand in like driveways and are like asking each other, like, how are you? You know, and that like, that changes the way that you interact with people if you care, right? And building a community in your local space can really help you in a, like, I don't know, an emotional sense.
I definitely agree. I mean, I can't speak highly, praise highly enough what happened to the improv global community because we were forced to go online again. The mother of all invention, you know, we out of necessity we all connected online, and I can't emphasize enough how important that is. But in terms of like actual analog human connection, I get more connection from being grounded in the city of Liverpool, you know, and the people that I meet and the people I talk to and the community that we build together. the improv community. You know, it for me is feels real to me. But then I'm of a certain age where I am I'm a pre-digital person, so you know my connections have always been more face to face. You know, rather than digital and online. Although I love that. But nevertheless.
Oh, sure. But it's almost like we were talking about before, freelance versus, you know, working for the man. Sometimes that's what you're into. It's fine. Like the kids that are making videos on TikTok. Do I have TikTok? No, absolutely not. But do I respect all of the cool work that is being made on there? Yeah. Yes, I do. I'm excited for them. If they love that, if that's what gets them going, if they're like inspired to like make this video and do a duet with a stranger. Absolutely. I want you to do that.
It's so creative as well, like TikTok and all of that. I mean, the amount of sort of digital skills that young people are picking up just because that is the way the world is now with TikTok and this, that, and the other. It's like people are learning how to edit, you know, video edit, create music, underscore a scene. You know, there's all sorts of like create captions and bylines, and you know, there's the amount of creativity that goes into you know, a little TikTok video or a YouTube or something like that. There's a ton of creativity that goes into all of that. And I just think, good on you. You know, it's not something that I can do or do, but I value its place in the world and the amount of creativity that goes into it. It's just, for me, it's not, I can't do all that kind of techie stuff.
Oh yeah, me neither. Absolutely. Absolutely. This podcast is the most technological thing that I do. This is about it. And realistically, it's one button. I'm like, record, done. And then I'm like, end record. Okay, great. We did it, guys. You know, that's about as wild as I am. So you had a lot of experience doing, did you do film and whatnot? Did the pandemic sort of bring you back to wanting to be more live theater? Like, because you mentioned that the analog connection is something that you found was most important to you. Is that something that was also in your mind when you were like, I'm going to stop doing film acting and I'm going to go back to live theater? Is that something you learned about yourself, or how did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, I did, when I was an actor, I did theater as well as film and TV and stuff like that. But I think the feeling that I get from live theater is different and more essential and more life affirming than doing digital like or film kind of work. It's the real live connection that I really like on stage, in a theatre, everyone together, or at a comedy gig, you know, everyone's together. It's really visceral, you know, and I really like that aliveness of live theatre or live comedy. Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
I like that moment when you're in a theatre and everyone's humming and buzzing and sitting on their seats, and then the lights just kind of fade and you know that the show is just about to start, and like I still get goosebumps now of like excitement of like what is this show that I'm going to see. You know, I just get that buzz and that frisson, you know, from that environment. So yeah, for me, it's the same with comedy gigs. Like I did a lot of stuff online, improv stuff online, shows and classes and all sorts of things live, you know, live two-person scenes, all of that. And it's great. But to be able to come back to being in person, both performing and teaching, I just get a buzz, you know. It's really life affirming for me to be in the same space as other human beings and do something live, create something, present something, learn something. You know, doing that in person to me is like, that's at the heart of it for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I was sort of already in the beginning of a journey of being separate from live performance when I first had my child. Like I said, he's four, so he's been around before the pandemic. So my break from being doing live stuff was before the pandemic, right? So I've kind of been at home for a long time. And once you have a kid, like the nights and weekends schedule just doesn't really work anymore, right? But man, doing all the online stuff, not even remotely being able to do a live show, really reminded me that that's what I want to do, that live, in person, anything. Like, I will host a show. Is it a corporate show? Great. I don't care. Give me that microphone. I'll talk to those people in that room. Anything where we're physically in the same space with each other is what fills me up. Like, that energizes me like no other. Even talking to strangers these days, just a stranger chat is my like excitement. Like yesterday, I got my hair cut and I spent like 20 minutes before the thing chatting up the receptionist. And then when I had to go with the stylist came over to pick me up, I was like, hey, great chat. Really good. Because like, you know, some people are afraid to talk to strangers first before the pandemic. And now they're afraid because they're all like, they're all got the virus, right? So nobody talks to each other. But God, I love talking to strangers.
Yeah.
I love talking to them when I'm on stage. I love talking to them when I'm off stage. Please let me get you into a conversation about literally anything. And, you know, I don't know if I would have... Because I have an agent too. I do like film and TV acting, mostly small, tiny little things. But the thing that really jazzes me is that in-person stuff. And I had to be away from it to kind of realize, oh, yep, that's the thing. That's where I need to put my effort now, is that situation. Yeah, I feel like I'm having a personal epiphany in the middle of this whole thing. I'm like, oh my God, I do want to do this.
Yeah, I think there's a real desire for it, for human conversation or human liveness. I think there's a desire and a need for it now. You know, we're still in a pandemic, but thankfully, yeah, remarkably easier to a large extent than it was 18 months ago, for example. But I think having been through like a global pandemic, which none of us have ever been through before, and our whole lives became digitalized, you know, and we lost those communication skills or those social skills. We didn't lose them. They just had to lie dormant for a bit because we were digital, you know, and all our communication was vicariously through a screen. And I think that now there's a desire to get back. I certainly feel it in me. There's like a real desire and enjoyment. Like since I've been teaching back in person again, I think, yeah, I started teaching in person again in July 2021. And as soon as it felt safe enough to teach back in person, I just felt like I'd really missed it. And I had accommodated the online world because we had to, but actually my heart is always in person exchange and interaction. And actually thinking about it, going back to what we first started talking about, that's what I was doing when I was 7 years old, when I first took a step into the youth theatre. You know, it was in person, it was live, it was collaborative, it was with other people, it was community based. It was localized and it was alive. So, you know, I think that's just the sort of person I am, really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so glad that there was this community theater that existed. Like every time people like us who are like doing these smaller things or like creating our own theaters or like trying to sell classes and you're like, oh God, but who even needs it? We needed it. And someone gave it to us. There was like when I was a little kid, and I realized the other day, I keep talking about this woman. I was six when I met this woman. My mom worked, and so after school, there was a young girl, Miss Blackwell, who took care of me while my sister was still in daycare, and she was very theatrical, and she would just convince us to do little plays. And so me and the other kids she babysat, we'd like build up, you know, things in his living room or my living room, and then we'd act out these whole scenes, and we did like shows for our parents sometimes. And if not for Miss Blackwell, I mean, who knows if I'd even be doing this? But it was so like, this is the best. I love this. And like, that matters. Like, I've tried to find her. I don't know where she is in the world, but it's like, that was so formative. That was exactly what I needed. That was like, thank you to everyone out there teaching children and like creating space for kids to find their tribe, like you mentioned. Like, we need that, and we need it early. And we need
it as adults as well, because you're so right. It's like those formative, when we're young and we have those formative experiences, those people, whether they're teachers or community members or whatever, you know, we've everything to be grateful to them for showing us, for me anyway, showing me creativity and self-expression. I'm ever grateful for that. But I also actually think more and more that as it's so important for adults to have those experiences as well, because as adults, we spend so long adulting because we have responsibilities, we have bills, we are socially and politically aware, and that's hard. So, you know, I think to have those community theatres or improv schools or dance schools, art classes, whatever it is, that enables adults to find their inner self-expression and creativity and playfulness. In terms of improv, we're enabling and helping adults reconnect with their playful spirit. And I think that is more important than ever, especially coming out of a pandemic. But even before the pandemic, I've always valued, when I first started learning improv as an adult, it was the only space in a week. This is whilst I was teaching. So going to an improv drop-in class when I first started was the only place for 2 hours every week that was for me as an adult to play and laugh and create and imagine and all of that stuff. So I love providing that for people, for adults now, whether that's online or in person, actually. So, I mean, so many people who have come to Liverpool Comedy Improv classes have, you know, basically thanked, you know, and been appreciative of the opportunity that LCI, and this is for every improv school, hopefully, creating opportunities for adults to play. It's really rare, you know.
Yeah.
And it's essential.
Yeah, and a lot of times you don't realize how much you need it. You know, they think, oh, well, you know, I can't play. I'm an adult now. This is not something. And it's like the discussion I feel like we've been having for the past couple of years, work-life balance. Like, you need to balance. Your work is not everything, especially here in the U.S. There is a intense toxic culture related to working, with reference to like work hard, work all the time, hustle, hustle. If you're not working, you're dead. It's like, guys, like, give yourself a break just for a second, you know?
It's that phrase, isn't it? One, we should work for life, not we should work to live, not live to work. You know what I mean? So we work in order to live, in order to earn money to live, you know, to have leisure time, pleasure time, all of that time. That's what we should be working for, rather than living to work, you know, which is a very much a kind of US and UK mental attitude towards work, productivity, effectivity, all of that stuff. And it's like, really? But what are we doing it for?
Yeah. If you're like really doing important stuff, like, hey, people who are running nonprofits that are saving children from child abuse, please work all the time. That's fine. I support you. I will call you and tell you you're pretty all day if that's what you need. Like, no problem. You're doing the important work. But like, if you're just working at an office or something, or if you're like, especially if you don't care about the office, like it's one thing if you're like, well, this is a business that really, great, absolutely, be excited about your business. Love where you're working. You should, but you need distance. In the same way that you need distance with relationships and friendships, you know, you can't spend all your time with your spouse or with your best friend. You need time with this person, time with that person, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, like, or even food. Like, you can't just eat the same thing every single day. You got to change it up, or else it feels like it's stale, you know? And if that's how it feels with food, it definitely feels like that with work, you know? So you got to give yourself some space to do different things. And I feel like people don't give themselves, I hate to use the word self-care, but like, you need to take care of yourself and give yourself a moment to think about things. Like, about in whatever context that might be, whether you take a yoga class or an improv class, or, you know, you like to go to church. Great. As long as you take a moment to give yourself a break and just sit there quietly for a moment, or doing something, you're painting, whatever it is, just to break from the cacophony in your head of like, got to get this done, got to get this done. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. If you don't take the break, like, how do you even appreciate the work that you did?
Yeah, and I think a lot of mental health problems and well-being problems and all sorts of things, a lot of breakdowns, you know, a lot of things can happen if one doesn't take that time for yourself. I mean, I'm biased and I think improv is the key and the answer to everything.
Oh, me too.
You know, but a lot of people do say that, like, you know, coming to classes, improv classes, is like the one thing in the week that they look forward to. It is that break. It is that time and space for them just to be funny and wacky and connect with other people and creative. That's what it was for me. And I know that that's what it provides for many, many people who, you know, are under a lot of pressure to keep working and keep being productive and effective and all of that, and earn the money and pay the bills, all of this adulting that we have to do.
Yeah.
It creates a lot of, it's like a pressure cooker. You know, there's a lot of stuff being put into this pressure cooker, and you've got to have that release. Otherwise, you know, I think people suffer mentally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or have breakdowns in lots of different ways. Sometimes it's as easy as like, oh, she's crying, or like, oh, she quit that job because it was, you know, taking too much away from her. But then, I mean, the last couple of years, I've noticed people are popping off way more intensely than they ever were before, because the pressure cooker now contains this like reminder of mortality on a regular basis.
The pandemic has been an awfully toxic ingredient to add to the pressure cooker.
Yeah,
it really, you know, does take its toll on many of us. Yeah. Not feeling safe, you know, is such a thing. Like, humans and animals have to feel safe.
Yeah.
And if we don't feel safe because we're living in a pandemic, I think that just adds a real toxic anxiety ingredient to the pot. You know, and it's something that I think improv can really help with, or any creative artistic form can really help people deal with living in a pressure pot and living with anxiety and all of that kind of stuff that, yeah, a lot of people are feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you're like, oh my God, there's no way I'm getting on a stage. Like, what are you talking about? I like watching improv, but I am not going to do it. And I hear that from people sometimes. And I'm like, listen, just any way that you can get a release. I mean, the morning pages of the Artist's Way, just literally writing 3 pages or something in the morning when you first wake up, just like emptying your brain of whatever. It's just helpful because it helps you clear out the clutter. So you're like, okay, now I'm ready to start the day in that way. Like, and that doesn't have to be creative at all. I mean, like, when I was doing them, I was just basic household things I was worried about. Like, oh man, when am I going to get this done? What's going to go on? Da, 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 da. How am I going to ever do this? Was anyone going to read that? Is that like a story I'm writing? No, but did it clear me to start my day. Yeah. Like it really helped, you know.
Yeah.
I was doing it a lot in the early days of having the baby when I felt like there was no creativity in my life. And it like, it opened me to being able to do creative stuff with my child during the day, because I was like, well, you've got to write. It's important for you to write. And the writing was not creative. So, but it helped so intensely.
Yeah. They're the people who I love teaching the most. The people who come to classes who, you know, they say, oh, I'm not a performer. I don't want to perform comedy or drama or acting. None of that is for me. That's not really who I am. I've never done anything like this before. They're the people I love to teach, because the progression that you see early on from a beginner who is not a performer and doesn't want to perform, but their progression, once they experience improv and how freeing it is and how doable it is, you know, everyone can improvise.
Yeah.
And the enjoyment that they get, the satisfaction, the exhilaration, the confidence boost that they get from it, all of that stuff is amazing. I would rather teach those type of people any day, you know, any day of the week. Mm-hmm. You know, as opposed to people who are like already performers or have got an ego and want to, and think they're brilliant, you know, and want to perform and show off. I'm not interested in show offs. I'm interested in regular folk who think it's not for them and then have a go anyway, and then progress amazingly, and then perform maybe just even within the class, and feel amazing about themselves. That for me, that's everything. It's like, I want people to feel good about themselves. And I think improv is such a key to open that door, to unlocking that door, to well-being, self-confidence, all of that stuff. It's just a huge, huge key. And so, yeah, give me those people any day.
Oh, agreed. I taught level one for years. Like, give me the newbies. Let me prep them. Let me get them ready to go on this journey, or just teach them one class and say goodbye to them. Like, I want that. And what was so funny is like all the rest of the teachers never wanted it. So no one ever fought me for that position. Like, I was like, no, I only want to teach level one. And they're like, really? Oh, I want to teach, you know, level five, or I want to talk to, like, no. I don't want to talk to you about how, you know, to nuance something, or like, oh, you've done this for 20 years. Let's talk about it. And don't get me wrong, like, I would be happy to teach advanced students. I have certainly thoughts and could help them in whatever way. But yeah, there's something about the magic of the newness, the magic of being the person who can convince them that they can get through it. You know, it's like that's one of my superpowers, is that like people trust me early, quickly. And so I take that seriously, and I'm like, I will take care of you in these 8 weeks. You are safe here. Like, let's experience something together. And if you want to go forward after that, great. If you don't, just take these 8 weeks together and just use that later in your life. But never in the world is there a place, nowhere is there a place where people support you in the way you do in improv. The way, there's no situation in which the rule is help the other person that first.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the whole point is making them look good. You know, and I tell all of my classes, the first thing I ever always tell them is, you know, that this is safe, I'm safe, but the only way this really can be safe is if you guys are safe to each other. So we need to all agree, class contract, that we are going to be kind to ourselves and to others in this experience. Yeah. Nowhere else in the world can you guarantee that, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's why it's so powerful as well, improv. I mean, in and of itself as a creative art form, I think it's wonderful and amazing and beautiful and funny, all of that stuff. But it's actually the human stuff that underlies improv as an art form that I am totally here for. You know, make the other person look good, listen to them, support them, say yes to that. You know, like, it, all of that all of that human stuff has created lifelong friendships. It's created, you know, well-being and mental health enhancements, you know, it's friendship groups, you know, it's created all sorts of, I mean, I had somebody recently saying doing improv has helped them in their relationship with their partner, because then they listen to each other better now. And also a parent said, oh, I listen to my child so much better now that you know, I'm an improviser. And it's, so it's like, it's actually all the human stuff that underpins improv that I just think is just, yeah, it's like free medicine.
Totally. I mean, I'm a big proponent of improv could save the world. I'm like, does anyone have an in with the UN? I would love to give them a workshop. Like, guys, yeah. Now that we're all together, can we just do a little zip, zap, zap? Okay, come on. Get into it, Germany. Come on. You know, like, because... You know, there are so many people in intense jobs, like doctors, for instance. The beautiful program that Alan Alda started to help doctors get better at communicating by using improv. Like, these people are intelligent, amazing people. They have chosen a career to help the world, and that is honorable and great. But unfortunately, the schooling and skill set required to do that job isn't the same one that is required for them to get anyone to listen to them about their new science that they just invented, or like new thing that, oh, by the way, I figured out how to do this one operation. No one's ever done it before. And it's like, if there isn't a little PR and PR in sort of an improv, you know, I need to speak to people kind of way. Like, if not that, we'll never find out. Like, that guy could be like, yeah, I can save people with this one little thing. I tell you? No? Okay, that's fine. I'll be quiet now.
Yeah. Or they tell people and not listen to, you know, their ideas. They get a no but, you know, rather than a yes and. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we live in a no but world for sure. Though there is a part of me that's like, always kind of happy that improv is uncool. Like, I'm like, it's cool. Don't, not everyone has to do it. I prefer it to be a little punk rock. Like, I'm not interested in it becoming mainstream. I mean, don't get me wrong. The Whose Line Is It Anyway show in Las Vegas was like exciting for me because it felt like it was like, oh, okay, a few of these people might see something that they did not expect. Like, and the people who like brought it to TV, good for you guys. Like, way to find a way to make it happen, get it out there. They knew it could save the world. And they were like, how do we do it? How do we do it? Ooh, TV. And that, it was great. You know, every time I see it, I was like, you can throw shade at whoever you want in that crowd over there. But, you know, they did a service. You know, how many people do I talk to in the U.S. who did not even know what improv was until Whose Line Is It Anyway? I'm like, that's, you can love or hate Drew Carey all you want. He helped.
It's the same here. It's the same here. I mean, improv is much more well known generally in the States than it is in the U.K., although that is changing. But I have to say, as a very quick shortcut to getting people to understand what improv is, I'll say, did you ever watch Whose Line Is It Anyway? And they'll go, oh, yeah. And I'll say, well, I teach people how to do that.
Yeah. It's a great shorthand.
The quickest shortcut way of explaining it. Obviously, we know there's a lot more to it than that. But just in terms of trying to communicate your craft to other people who don't know about it, because it is very niche, you know. Yeah. A lot of people here in Liverpool, Liverpool's a really funny city. You know, everyone's a comedian. But it's stand-up, you know, it's not improv. So if I talk to people in Liverpool and they say, what do you do? And I say, I teach improv comedy. And they'll go, oh, yeah, stand-up. And I'm like, no, it's not stand-up. You know, so then I have to go into the explaining what it is. So I'm still at that stage where I'm having to explain and educate. Like, I'd love to get to the stage at some point where I can say to somebody who I've never met, I teach improv, and they go, oh yeah, improv. Oh, that's, yeah. You know, like I can't wait to get to that point when it's a known thing, you know?
Oh man. Well, I'm into your high hopes. I think maybe my tombstone's going to say improviser. No, not a stand up. Like, yes. Yeah, I mean, that happens to everyone. Like, I can't tell you the hundreds of people who have been like, yeah, and then I had to convince my family it wasn't stand-up. Like, every day people are trying to, like, oh, tell me a joke. I was like, number one, stand-ups don't do that. That's not what they're going to do. They're not just going to, like, whip out a joke, you know? I said, but also not what I do.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not really how comedy works. It'd be like meeting somebody and they're like, oh, I'm a novelist. And you're like, tell me a story. You're like,
yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. No. Though I suppose that does happen to doctors. They're like, you're a doctor. Oh, I have this cut. Can you look at it? Yeah. Like, no, that's not what I do. I'm not that kind of doctor. Oh man, yeah, I am in full agreement with you about how improv is saving the world. And I wish there was a true way to get it into the corners it needed to be in, because while I love where it is and how it's connected, you know, theater people are already theater people. And I think artists start with a base level of empathy that's more than your average person. If only just from the basic ideas of, I am interested in the perspectives of other people, i.e. I'd like to play a character I'm not, right? Even just the essence of being interested in that means that you're willing to see the world from different points of view. Whereas the people that are not, I wish there was a way to get improv into their lives in a, like, almost like a secret, you don't know this is happening, but I'm teaching you empathy kind of way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, let's dance around and do this exercise. And by the way, and now you love people. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, the empathy thing, and I'm sort of fascinated by other people, and I'm dead curious about them, you know. So, and I think that's partly because I've always been an actor, and to do my job, I have to be interested and curious in other people.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly for improv, like, that's one of my baselines that I say in class. It's like, be curious about what your partner has just said to you. You know, your scene partner has just said blah. Aren't you curious about that? Like, be interested in that, because, you know, that's how we make connections on stage and off stage. You know, is like, somebody asks a question, they give an answer, and then they ask a follow up question. Because that's, you know, be curious.
Yeah.
I find people fascinating. So,
absolutely. Yeah. When I teach a workshop on interviewing and podcasting, and I have a thing that's an exercise I call follow up or connect. So I'm like, talk to somebody about something, and then whatever you're talking about, you either need to listen to what they're saying and either provide a follow-up question directly related to what they're talking about, or whatever they're talking about, if it connects to something you know or you care about, you connect with that and tell them, oh, you lived in Albuquerque for 3 years? Me too. Like, what about this thing? And then the connection leads to better communication as you move forward, and you're able to do that. And I think that that's as helpful for improv as it is for, you know, interviewing skills, that it's like follow up or connect. It's either we are similar in that way. Let's discuss how we are similar. Or like, I don't know anything about that. Tell me more about that. I am curious. I love that. Curiosity, I think, is a perfect word for it in that moment. So I want to ask you a quick question and just go back slightly in your like career just for a second to get a framework of this. You seem, you're very well established right now and running an improv comedy school in Liverpool, but previous to that you did acting. And when we first talked about it a while back, you said, oh, I decided at 16 that I wanted to do it, but I had no idea how to get it done. So how did you find out? Like, who told you? No, because really, there's not like a book. I mean, I know there's books, but like, they don't give you a real, there's lots of books, I've read tons of them, but they're not, all of them give you like a real, here are the opportunities in your area, or this is the way that you get an agent or whatever, because that kind of stuff changes. So how did you connect to, how do we even get to that next step?
It was just fortuitous, really, and luck. And bear in mind, I'm going back to 1990 when I first got my first professional job, and the world is a completely different place now.
Sure.
So I don't know how anyone of any age that wants to be an actor, I don't actually know how they would do that these days, because it's a completely different world.
Totally.
But my experience was that my the big break that I got was that the BBC here were auditioning for a film, a screenplay, a film for their BBC Two. And they had open auditions in Liverpool. So I heard about these auditions. They were just looking for a young Liverpool lass, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old. And I just thought, well, I've got nothing to lose. So I just went along to the open auditions, filled out a form, auditioned for this role. And I got lucky, and I got recalled 6 times for the part. And then on the 6th audition, they said, okay, you've got it. So that was like the first, that for me is just luck and fortuitous. As well as me deciding to go for it, you know. I guess I could have seen I saw the advert for the open audition, and I could have chosen to ignore it and gone, oh no, too scary, not for me. But I, at that point, I had nothing to lose, everything to gain and nothing to lose.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was only 16, 17 years old. So, yeah, so I got my first job at 17, and it was for the BBC, and it was a film, and it was, written by quite a well-known writer, Liverpool writer called Jimmy McGovern. It was starring some quite well-known actors at the time. So it was just a really lucky break. And then subsequently from that, got a really big agent in London, and got all my work through my agent at that point. But, you know, that hardly ever happens these days, I would say. I mean, to be picked up off the street, audition, get it, and then get a shit hot agent, I don't think that happens very much. So I think I was just like, you know, the stars aligned at that point, and I just got lucky.
I mean, I appreciate that you're like, the world is different now, but realistically, I think that taking a chance and it working out and then the agents follow is something that happens. You know, think of the YouTube stars that, like, they're just sitting in their house singing a song with their guitar, and somebody sees it and says, hey, wait a minute, this kid's pretty good. And then it goes from there. So at the end of the day, it's just accepting the opportunities that are put in front of you, trying, putting some effort into it, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it starts, I think you're right. I think that is what happens now. It happens digitally. So YouTube or TikTok or something, where people are noticed because they're putting their creativity into the digital platform. You know, yeah, I existed before the internet, so that didn't happen in that way. But I think you're right. I think the thing that underpins it mostly is the importance of saying yes. So I said yes to myself, to going to this audition. It's like I might have been scared. I might have been pretty unconvinced that I was in it, had a hope in hell of getting it. But I said yes anyway. And I think that's probably the same principle still stands today. If an opportunity comes along, say yes. Unless you feel it's exploitative, then say no. But sure. If it's an opportunity to try something, do something, say yes. And second to that, make it happen yourself. So make a YouTube channel, do it yourself, and then I think actors have to be very driven, very ambitious, very driven, and have to handle rejection very, very well. So
yeah.
It's a tough world, I think.
Yeah, certainly it's definitely different, but that's why I wanted to connect your story with, you know, a similar way that it happened, because you're right. It really just is about being open to it, saying yes when the opportunity happens and, you know, putting yourself out there so that people see you and like notice what's going on with you. You know, it's not always everybody's going to, oh, I'm going to hand you this job or that. I mean, that happens so rarely. Most of the movies I've ever been in are just friends of mine who have been like, hey, you want to do a thing? Love it. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And you say yes to that. You say, yes, I'll do that.
Yeah, why not, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. So one final question, then I'll let you go, which is, you do so much to help other people. You're building a community. You're helping other artists to achieve their creative goals. And in this conversation, we've talked about how we need a work-life balance. What are you doing for yourself to creatively fill up yourself? What are you doing for you to make sure that you have all of your creative faculties to give to your students?
Wow, yeah, great question. I think I have little projects that I do. So at the moment, I'm working on a theatre project. Me and a few friends were collaborating on a verbatim piece of theatre. So, you know, every now and then little creative projects come along that I say yes to and that I want to get involved with, or that I make them happen myself. So that kind of like trundles along quietly whilst my main creative well is being filled by performing improv and teaching improv. So my own team, my own improv team, I enjoy performing with them, and they're called Boss Birds Improv, and we are the first and only all women team in Liverpool at the moment. So I founded Boss Birds just before the pandemic struck. So we had one live gig and then pandemic, so then we went online, and then we just sort of lay dormant for a while because we were all exhausted. So now we're back in person, we're doing monthly gigs. So for me, that's just really joyful because that's my playtime. So yeah, I perform with my team, I do little theatre projects on the side, and all of those things fill my creative well. And also, I mean, just completely unrelated, having a puppy is actually, it's exhausting, but nothing to do with improv, and it fills my well in a completely different way. You know, it's like got a little furry friend that I have to take out and walk 2-3 times a day, so that gets me out in nature, into my local parks, down to the River Mersey, you know. So that fills me up, because it's just me time, mine and my dog's time, you know. So that kind of restores a bit of work-life balance.
Yeah, I feel like pets were a big deal in the pandemic. People really realized how much taking care of an animal can help you take time for yourself. And like you said, connect with nature, like awesome. You have a reason to take a walk every day. Awesome. How good for you. Amazing. Yeah. And I feel the same way about my kid, that like he makes me creative in ways that I would never have thought of myself as a visual artist in any way. Not even a little. Right. No drawing, no painting, none of that stuff for me. But I have to do crafts constantly with this child, right? And so I've figured out crafting. I figured out what I like about crafting, you know? And then what I learn from that, I find I bring back to other parts of my creative, bring back to podcasting, bring back to writing, to performing. Like, oh, okay, maybe it is a little helpful, right? Oh, yeah. Man.
Right.
Yeah. Emma, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and chatting with me and going deep. We just like really gotten a nice, good, deep talk there, and I feel great about it. So thank you so much for being on the podcast.
It's a pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.